of Adoption in Focus, we will be hearing from Anna Sharkey, the CEO of Adoption Focus. Anna talks about what drove her to become the CEO of an outstanding adoption agency and her advice for anyone considering adoption. So without further ado, Anna, it's lovely to have you here. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's really good to be part of this.
It's a pleasure, Anna. To kick us off, could you tell us all a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, okay. I can do that and I will speak far too long. But yes, I'm Anna Sharkey. I'm the CEO at Adoption Focus Family Society with also responsibility for Triangle Project. And I've been involved since we started in 2009. So as we get to the end of 2023 and going into next year, we'll be celebrating 15 years of the organisation, which is absolutely fantastic. And prior to that, I worked in the voluntary sector. I was the head of family placement service at Father Hudson Society. And going back before then, I've worked in local authorities as well, specialising in adoption and fostering work since 1988, wow. Having qualified in 1984, at which point we were generic social workers, which meant that we had caseloads that reflected every type of service user for whom local authorities have responsibility. So that was from newborn to very old people and everything in between. And I spent a lot of time in court with naughty boys who were up to it, but was really good fun. And I came into adoption work and social work generally because I grew up in a family which fostered and adopted, and my parents started fostering at the end of the 1960s. And in fact, I met a friend recently who I haven't seen for 30 years who said, well, of course, there was an inevitability about what you were going to be. Your house was always so full and so busy, and it was always everybody else's children. And that never changed. So the children that my parents started with fostering were pre-adoption babies, and we used to have two or three at a time. So I am an absolute expert bottle feeder, baby bather, and nappy changer. And then as adoption changed and the children who were available for adoption became a different cohort of children, we then had children who had more complex needs, so children with disabilities, children who'd experienced abuse, children who had been exposed to drugs and alcohol pre-birth. And that also meant that the parents we were dealing with were also quite different. So we were very used to a whole range of different people and different circumstances. And we're always brought up on the basis that these things can happen to absolutely anybody. And nobody is better than anyone else, but nor is anyone worse than anyone else. And what we have to do is just help people through. And the other thing my mum always said, and will still say, in terms of the babies particularly, but also the really little people we were looking after, you get one go at a childhood. And if for whatever reason the parents who have those children can't look after them, then it's the responsibility of other adults to make sure that there are other people who can give them that childhood that every child needs, which is one where they feel loved, secure and stable.
Oh, thank you, Anna. I think, and to your mum, really inspiring.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And she actually, I mean, the other things that happened from that were, you know, she kept in contact with some of the mums. And we also, and there's a photo album in her home which has got the photos of the almost 60 babies that were cared for. So it was a long time, and so many different things going on. So yeah, it was a very interesting time, to say the least. And I say we adopted as well because I have a younger sister who was one of the babies who stayed.
Why?
And she is my younger sister. I was 11 when she came to stay with us, and she came for 48 hours. And 5 years later, she was still in our family. Wow. And at that point, my parents adopted her. And then very recently, I was in hospital with my mum, who is unwell. And she arrived, my sister arrived at the hospital, and I thought she'd come to see my mum. And she'd actually come to see our foster sister, who was also in the hospital. And she's the last child my parents fostered. And Alex came to us when she was 36 hours old. And is now in her early 50s. And she was placed as a child with Down syndrome for as long as she needed a placement, which meant actually when my mum was 85 and needed some care herself, that we needed to make other arrangements for her continuing care. But she's still very much part of the family as well. And was very excited that we'd all turned up in hospital to see her. So it
was an
interesting time. Yeah.
So I guess really from personal and professional, you've seen a lot of changes in the adoption world and the adoption sector. But for those listening at home, Anna, would you be able to explain what does the voluntary adoption sector look like? And what is the difference?
Well, the reason that there is a voluntary sector goes back to where adoption started in this country. So there have been, over forever, people looking after other people's children as necessary. And the process of adoption as a legal process didn't become part of the law really until the 1920s. And at that time, adoption was predominantly done by the voluntary sector. So it was church. And other organisations who were involved in doing that. And they were what were known as third-party adoptions, where if a doctor who may know that somebody was pregnant and it wasn't a pregnancy that they felt they could continue to care for the child because of the circumstances they were in at the time, that doctor may also well have known a family where they were experiencing infertility and could have made a really nice connection for. And those sorts of things would happen. There were, of course, children's homes and mother and baby homes and circumstances in which certainly during that period and continuing, and in fact continuing during the time that my parents were first fostering, the young women who did not keep their babies because illegitimacy and all of the circumstances around being able to care for your child and manage their upbringing is something that was much more difficult. Although I would say there would also have been people within that situation who may have felt it really was absolutely the right decision. And when things started to change legally is the really big change was the 1976 Adoption Act. One was that's when if a child had been with foster carers for a period of time, it was suggested that foster carers could become the permanent parents for the child and adopt, which is actually my sister's experience was that she was placed with us as foster carers. By the time the 1976 Act was being fully implemented, she was of an age where she had been with us by then on her 48-hour placement for 5 years, and the adoption went through on that basis, which was a really positive thing for us and for her. The other thing it did was move the statutory responsibility for adoption into local authorities. And it also is the piece of legislation that said that anybody who was adopted had a right to know that and could access their birth records.
That's huge.
And was a really important piece of legislation and very interesting because it was retrospective. And that meant that anybody adopted up until that point who may well have thought that nothing would ever come of that. So those birth mothers who were told, your baby will be adopted, we don't need to talk about this anymore, and off you go.
Right.
And adopters who were told, bring this child up as your own, nobody needs to know this. So of course, everybody does know this. I always remember the adopters I placed a newborn with who said, of course our child will grow up knowing they're adopted. Even the milkman knew. Because suddenly there was a newborn baby in this house and I hadn't been pregnant.
Yeah.
It was pretty obvious.
There is that.
You know? So let's talk about this because it's a good thing. It's not something that should be hidden. But what was also the case in the 1970s was that the expertise around adoption was in the voluntary sector. So there was a real push to keep the expertise that existed in the social workers that were working in the voluntary sector, and the voluntary sector being it's charities, it's not-for-profit organisations, and the legislation is very clear in relation to adoption. You can only provide adoption services if you are either a local authority or you're from the third sector. So that is the voluntary, that's who the voluntary adoption agencies are, which is really good as well. This is about this all being about the children who need placements. It's not any other motivation there. It's purely about making good decisions for children. So the voluntary sector was continue to be involved in providing, but how we work as a sector is we work with the adopters. We are there to recruit, assess, approve, support our adoptive families for as long as it takes in their adoption family life. And the difference then is also that we do not have the statutory responsibility for the children, because the legislation places that responsibility with local authorities, who are therefore responsible for safeguarding children on a statutory basis and in making care plans for children where they cannot stay in their family of origin. And we then work with our local authority colleagues to make placements on their behalf with our adoptive families.
And that's across the nation, isn't it, Anna, the local authority colleagues? Is that?
Yes. So, I mean, the other thing that has happened with the local authorities is that the push from government has been to move local authorities into regional adoption agencies. And the basis for that is that a group of local authorities in a particular region will work together to provide adoption services and make placements for the children that are cared for by the local authorities that then form the regional adoption agencies. And we work with them. Those regional adoption agencies are across the country. And then there is a slight variation as well in terms of how things work in Scotland and Wales. And but we will still make placements from across the country, and it includes, we have placed children from Scotland and from Wales as well.
Thank you. I don't know if you've, well, you must have heard of many myths about adoption, Anna, but I wondered if you had any that stood out to you that we could kind of myth bust at all. I know one for me is, you know, that people believe adopting a child, they'll never feel like your real child, you'll never feel like a family. I wondered if you had any that you'd had experience of.
Well, I will start with answering that one, really, because I remember years ago my mum was interviewed for an item on Women's Hour.
Why?
And there was they chatted about parenting and about fostering and about what it felt like, because she always said, you know, looking after other people's children is a huge responsibility, and that's what she always knew she was doing as a foster carer. As an adoptive mum, she said she could always say with absolute certainty that her feelings for her children are the same. There is no difference. And she says that she can say that with confidence because she has four birth children and an adopted daughter and then a long-term fostering daughter as well, Alex, who she can, you know, is still part of the family. And I think there's that whole sense of how we make connections and who we feel connected to. And I think one of the other things that follows on from that is adopters feeling about is that sense of claiming their child and of ownership and feeling that they are their parents. And I think the way to look at that is, I don't feel owned by my parents. I feel I belong to my family in the same way that I don't own my children, that they belong to my family. And I think that whole worry about how am I going to feel and what's it going to be like and is this going to be different, all our relationships with everybody we're in connection with will have variations on them depending on who the person is and how they fit in with our lives and what we do. So I think that there's that whole sense of who those people are and how we work, and having confidence in ourselves and what we can do, and that motivation about why do I want to be a parent?
Yeah.
Because all parenting is demanding and challenging, and it's different. It changes over time as well. And we know that our children change over time, because just look at what we've done ourselves. You know, we're not the same people now as we were 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And that time that we grow up is just so huge, and it's just absolutely enormous. But I think there's huge myths out there that people, and I think the way we think about those is when we think about people making that first contact with us. And I always work on the basis that somebody either sending us an email, or less often now, but might pick the phone up, but other than that, attending one of our regular information events, that worry about, they're going to ask me about this because this thing is going to be the one thing that's going to be a problem. And the minute we ask it, the defense goes up, and the person isn't aware or may not realize that it's something we're asking everybody.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, so if you've got somebody who was in a relationship in their early 20s, and they got married and the marriage failed after a couple of years, and they're going to think, oh, no, you're not going to take, if you're divorced, that's a real problem. We're going to ask everybody about previous relationships, and we are going to ask people about why they came to an end, and we are going to want to know what went on. But that's because we're here to make sure that wherever a child goes to live is going to be safe and secure and loving. And if somebody's got a worry, we need to know about that. But if the adopter, the person thinking about adoption, has got a worry about what they're going to say or what we're going to say, ask us about it. Because there'll be loads of other people out there ready to say something that's going to really concern them. And I spoke to some at the end of last week, and he said that some years ago he had gone to an information event. And him and his wife had walked in and felt so positive about it, this hugely important thing they'd done. And the first person that said, the first thing that was said to them by the person leading it was, these children are really difficult.
Oh, wow.
This is really challenging. It's not for the faint-hearted. And he said, by the end of it, I was thinking, well, that's it then. We can't do this.
Oh.
And that is so unhelpful, because there will always be somebody who is always going to be so awful. They're children. Yeah. And I think that's the bigger one. You know, people do all their own bit about you've got to be in a house that's this size, you've got to earn this amount of money, you've got to be in a, we're going to ask you about all of that stuff, but we want to know why you think that's as good as it can be for the child who's going to come and live with you, because you've got to be in a very stable, secure place where you can actually get on with being a parent. The rest of it about who these children are and what they're doing, and we'll take you every step of the way to get to the point where you know that you really can do this. And that's the important bit. And you'll do that with them, Lee. That's what you'll do. You will feel. Because it is that confidence thing, and people don't have confidence in their own skills. And actually, anyone who thinks they've got all the answers as a parent has not ever been a parent, because there's not a parent out there who has got all the answers. They're just
And it, you know, it goes back to, doesn't it, that actually at the end of it all, what we want to do is make that sense of belonging. That child belongs with those parents and that family belongs as those parents. That's so important, isn't it? And you can't make people do that. You either want to.
It's that whole bit about, you know, what I think one of the things I really look for, because I'm the agency decision maker. So that means I'm the person who ends up with the report that's written about an adopter or an adoptive couple or an adoptive family about why they should be approved as suitable to adopt. And the absolute core thing about that is, so why do you want to be a parent? What sort of family do you think you're going to be? And why do you want to? And I'll keep coming back to why do you want to do this? Because yeah, so it's so crucial. Why do you want to do this? And it's one of those things that all parents should ask themselves, because it is such a huge step to take. And it has lifelong implications for every single person who's involved in that decision to become a parent. However you become a parent, it has lifelong implications for everybody. And so that end of a week where you've been in the middle of feeling really stressed because your little person isn't going to bed at night, and then was up very early, and you were thinking, this is really hard going. You have to think, yep, I wanted to do this. This is what I wanted. This, I knew it was going to be like this because I had some preparation to help me to think about what it was going to be like. And I still want to do it because I still want to be a parent, and I want to have that responsibility for someone else's life so I can make things better and give them the childhood that everybody needs.
Just one other myth that I've heard, and a lot of people say actually, is that as a solo prospective adopter, you know, you'll be judged differently, or it will be even harder. And that's not to say there aren't challenges of single parenting. You know, I'm sure I gave my mum many growing up, but I think there's a real worry for some solo prospective adopters that goes against them in the adoption process.
Yeah, I know there is that worry, and there shouldn't be. But I think that one of the things that is, I'll go back to the comment I made just before, which is people worry about a question we're asking, but we're asking everybody. Mm-hmm. And the one that solo adopters worry about is, when we talk about a support network.
Yeah.
But we ask everybody about a support network because as a parent, you're going to need people to support you in your parenting. You're not going to be absolutely on your own doing this. So when we ask the question, we're not just singling out the solo carers in this line of questioning, we're asking everybody. And one of the things we do, and I think works really well for people, is encourage family and friends to attend training groups with us and support each other, because it's about what really helps people. And people have different ways of working with their close friends and relations. But it really is thinking about who is there. It's those, what we want to know is, on the day that you go back to work, at the end of your parental leave, and at the end of that week, the school phones and says, your child has been sick in the classroom this afternoon. You're going to.
Yeah.
It's okay. I'm 40 minutes away. I'm going, but there's someone I can phone who can be there within 10 minutes. Is that okay? And it's this person, and this is who it's going to be. But also that your person at work, you can phone your person at work and say, I'm really sorry, my child's been sick and I've got to go and do this. Or your child has been with you for 2 or 3 years and then they're moving schools, or they've got a new teacher at school and they're really, really anxious about it. So you've gone back to, I actually need to come into work a bit later in the morning because I need to settle my child into class. I haven't got anyone to share that with, but I might, you know, there might be my best friend up the road, or my sister, or my mum, or my brother, or whoever it is who might just be able to come and do that. Because 3 years into placement, all of those people who said they were going to be my marvellous support network will also then turn up when the chips are down and come up with the goods, which is, yes, of course, I'll take your child to school because that's what we do. And that's what we're asking for. It's just making sure that you've got all those other things in place. And I just remember when my children were little, and I did used to think when I was doing baths at night or whatever, thank God there's someone else downstairs making the lunch boxes. And how do those single parents, they do this, they get the kids into bed, and they're also doing the up and down the stairs because at least one of them's not settling down and you're doing that. And you've still got to get the lunchbox done or the school uniform ironed or whatever. So it's just that. That's the difference. It's the practicalities and it's making sure people have thought about it. It doesn't mean you can't, and we're not being difficult about asking those questions. But wouldn't it be brilliant if you just got all the answers as well, which is, yes, of course I've got all these people around me and they are going to help me because we're in this together. I'm not going to just be on my own, but I'm going to be a great parent as a single parent because I am. But I know I'm going to have these other people around me, and that's just fabulous.
Absolutely. Thank you, Anna. So what piece of advice would you give to someone who is thinking about adoption?
Talk to us about it. Just talk to us about it and have that conversation and just find out. There's so much noise out there about adoption. Masses. It can feel really, really overwhelming. And there will be loads of advice, even when you didn't want it, from people saying all sorts of things to you that can also completely throw you from time to time, that you'll just feel dented by it, you'll just feel, you know, a pushback, and people will tell you all the reasons why you can't and all the reasons why perhaps you shouldn't, and go back to the motivation bit and think, yep, I really want to do this, I'm going to be really good at this and I can do this because, but then I'm really worried about how I'm going to get through it, so who am I going to talk to? Well, talk to the people who actually know, which is us. Because we do this all the time. It's what we do day in, day out with amazing people, all of whom started off by thinking, there's all these reasons why we can't do it. It's going to be really frightening. I don't want to ask something really silly because then they'll turn me down before I've even started because I've asked the one thing I should never have asked. Just talk to us about it. And, you know, we really are the experts. But what happens during the adoption process is that those prospective adopters become the experts with their children. And that's brilliant. And that's what we can do.
So thinking about adoption, made a decision. Would it be helpful for people at home to know a little bit about the children waiting for adoption?
Yeah. So I mentioned before that the children are the responsibility of local authorities, and that's a legal requirement. They have statutory duty of care to them. And I did mention that local authorities are involved in safeguarding, making decisions about when children can or cannot stay in their families of origin. I would add something to the bit about safeguarding before Lee reminds me of this, which is that, of course, safeguarding is all of our responsibilities. So, of course, if we ever had concerns, we would refer them straight back to the local authority. But in terms of the children who are referred to us, local authorities have a duty of care to birth families and to family life and retaining children wherever possible in their family of origin, which means that the children who are available for adoption will be children generally where a local authority will have already worked quite some time with the family of origin to try and enable the child to stay in that family, which means that the families where the children are coming into adoption will be families where they're there will be quite often a number of difficulties which have been too challenging for the local authority to support the family to overcome, which means that the child can then not stay in that family, which means, therefore, that the children who we are asked to place will be children where they will have had experience of abuse. Often it's about chaotic lives and neglect, so parents who aren't able to get their children into a routine, feed them well, keep them safe, keep them in an environment that is hygienic and meets their basic care needs. We also have children where that chaos has started pre-birth. So you've got children where parents may be involved in drug misuse and alcohol misuse, which will obviously impact on their own health, but also on that of their developing baby. Families where there are complicated relationships, where domestic violence may be part of that, which means that children may have been exposed to difficult circumstances in the family and been aware of that, those really unpleasant arguments and violence and, again, chaos. So children who've experienced chaos, neglect and difficult early start in life. If it was possible to sort those things out, the local authorities would do what they can to sort that out with as much support as to the birth family as possible. Where it can't happen, those children will be removed from their parents' care. Now, some of those children will have quite a lot of memory of what's gone on, but we also have families where we may have two or three children or four children where the relationships between the brothers and sisters are really important and we want to maintain those. So we're looking for adopters who can adopt a whole group of children, the older ones of whom will have more experience of and memories of those difficulties, because the younger ones are more likely to have been removed either at the point of birth or very shortly after, when the accumulation of two, three, four children has become another step too far for birth family members to cope with. We also have children who have disabilities, and where we have families where mental health difficulties may have been a factor in the reasons why parents cannot look after their children, or learning difficulties and other health problems that have made it impossible for them to care for their child, or the child themselves has got health problems or particular developmental needs that need additional support from their parents. And then, therefore, who are these children? Well, they're just little people, really, and of all types, with a range of experiences, who often have had the most difficult set of circumstances in their start of their life. And adopters do something absolutely immense by actually parenting and providing everything that that child needed but could not get in their family of origin. So that's who they are. They are delightful, and they also can run people ragged. So we also and obviously, you know, they're kind of like every other single child there is, and some. So there's the other stuff with it, which will be to do with those early life experiences. But I think, you know, what we also have to remember is nobody's family life is straightforward. And I think it's always useful to ask adopters to think about on what's going on in your family and friends. You know, what else has gone on? And I think some years ago, an adoptive family and their son, who was then, he was about 15, and he was delightful. He was just one of those, he'd just got these amazing survival skills, really. He was really cheeky, quite naughty. He'd been placed with them when he was 7, So he was an older child, which when you look at seven-year-olds, they're not very old.
No.
When you're an adopted child, that's considered quite old. And he was just utterly delightful, but also forever get me into the odd scrape here and there. And one of the things he was doing was going up to the park when he should have been at school with a whole group of other kids, and they were sitting under the trees having a smoke and having a drink, which they shouldn't have been doing. They were not. They should have been in school apart from anything else. And at the end of it all, his mum said to me, because she started off by saying, I'm just a bit worried because he's doing this, you know, the school are trying this, blah, blah, blah. She said, you know, and he's always the first to say he was there and he did it. He will take the blame for every other child. And then at the end of it, she said, I just need to ask you, is it because he's adopted? And I said, you know all those other kids he's hanging out with at the park? She said, yeah. I said, well, are they all adopted as well? She said, no. I said, well, there you are then. It's just what he's doing at the moment. It's just what he's... And he is now a dad himself.
Oh, wow.
So they are grandparents of... I think they've two grandchildren. And which is just brilliant. You know, yeah. So it carries on. It carries on. She, you know, when I say they can run you ragged, he definitely runs ragged. But she can go back to, why did I want to be a parent? Why did I want to adopt? What was that about? What did I think it was going to be like? And we've had a lot of laughs along the way, but he's driven us mad at times because I didn't want to be the parent at every open evening with the queue growing behind me because the teachers needed to have a bit of a longer word with me because, you know, he was up to something. But he was a lot of fun as well. And, you know, they are grandparents now. And he will be 32 in January. And that's the lifelong bit as well. That's the lifelong bit. It doesn't stop at any time, which is the other reason that adoption is so important for those children who cannot go home. Because as a care outcome for children, we know it provides them with so much more than some of the other care options that are out there. And I'm even, you know, in comparison with if you're a child in residential care or you're a child in foster care, it will come to an end.
Yeah.
You know, it's the bit that grandparents, that's the next generation. That's what success looks like. This is family life. Does he feel he belongs to them? Do they feel the grandchildren are there? Absolutely. This is our family. It's our stake in the future. And they got a future because those parents continue to be there. And I've said about, you know, he run them ragged. They're the sorts of things that, you know, when children can get into difficulties in their teens, and they're the sort of times when a child in foster care or placement might end because you know they're conditional.
Yeah.
As parents, we're unconditional. You're here. You're not going anywhere. You're here, and so are we. So we're here to sort things out because that's what we all need. Someone who's going to be there for you.
Yeah.
Who knows you? Got to know you. And that's the family bit. So you go back to, how do I feel I belong? How do I feel that this is my family? It's that investment, isn't it? It's that, the motivation and the investment and then the continuing care, which is just brilliant.
The stickability.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How would you describe the adoption journey for prospective adopters?
Well... I suppose it's as varied as every single adopter. Yeah. So when you were talking earlier about the myths and the things that are out there that people think, so one of the myths, or one of the self-perpetuating myths, is it's a really difficult, really intrusive, really lengthy process. Mm-hmm. And then you unpick all of that. What is it actually about? So if you go back to and I know I'm going to keep doing this, the motivation bit, mm-hmm. before it even starts with us, people have already been through some sort of process of their own. And that will also be and it's very, very varied. So that's everything from a couple who have experienced infertility, who have experienced perhaps two or three miscarriages, mm-hmm. who have had the huge disappointment of not achieving the pregnancy they thought they were going to have. So however they have dealt with that whole process, how what their experience of that has been, how they've lived that experience themselves as a couple, with their family, with the medical people who have got involved, mm-hmm. and the decision-making process they themselves have gone through, that's something that will be unique to them, but similar to that of other people. There will be other people who come to us as single adopters, mm-hmm. some of whom have done that as a very active choice because that's absolutely where they wanted to be. They have no intention of getting involved with somebody else. They're quite happy in their single life and it's what they're going to do. It's going to be marvellous. And that's great. And it's their first choice and they're really thinking about doing this process in that way, but might have all the worries about what are they going to make of me as a single adopter. But we also sometimes have single adopters who have maybe had a long-term relationship that has ended, and at the point at which it has ended, they're getting to a point of thinking, I'm not going to have time to get into another relationship where I'm going to have the confidence to feel that we've got time to have a birth child. So there may be disappointment and huge sense of loss about a relationship that didn't pan out as they had hoped, and that will be unique to them, but not unheard of. It's not uncommon. It's not, but it can, you know, it's a different route in. We have people who make a very definite first choice, and for some people, they will be doing that on the basis of very strongly held views around population and about not wanting to add to the global population in the knowledge that there are children who need a family. And they could do that, and they definitely want to parent in that route. So that's a different route. And we also have same-sex couples who come to adoption as their first choice and will have had a very specific journey about how they've reached that point in a relationship, yeah. and how that has also how that also fits within their community, their family life, their work and their employers, and how they've reached that position in their life and how that's panning out amongst the people that they know who are going to support them. And we have people who, you know, have their own health difficulties, people who may have been advised not to have a pregnancy because of health difficulties, or people who may worry that their health condition may prevent them from coming forward as an adopter. It's huge. So before they've even started, that's who we've got coming through the door, and also people who may also have thought or may have made a tentative inquiry and felt rebuffed.
Yeah.
They may have not had the answer they thought they were going to have, or the welcome they thought they were going to have, or may have felt put off and are feeling a bit fragile because of that, mm-hmm. a bit anxious and a bit concerned. And there is that whole bit about being judged. And the problem is, and we can't escape the fact, what we are going to engage with people is an assessment. But the assessment is about who are you? Why do you want to adopt? And what about your circumstances, which means that if we place a child with you, they're going to get the best go at having a childhood that we could actually achieve for them. So are they going to be safe? Are they going to be secure? Are they going to be loved? Are you going to be in a stable situation to manage this?
Yeah.
So the process from coming in the door and asking the questions and then relaxing into, we're doing this because we need to. And part of that is there's a whole regulatory framework that we have to abide by. But the other part to that is we need you to feel absolutely confident that you can, on the day that your child is placed with you, close the front door and begin your life together.
Yeah.
And we've got to get you to that point, which means that the process that we engage with you is working to ensure that you've got a knowledge base and a skill set building on what you're bringing with that already and the experiences that you have had to get you to the first point where you contacted us so that we can get you to the next point where we're saying this person is ready to have a child placed with them and then get on with the rest of your life, which that bit sounds quite straightforward. And of course it isn't.
We can just leave it there.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, the whole bit about the preparation groups, the opportunities to meet with other adopters, the information that's out there that is can feel very overwhelming, but the way that we can steer you in and to that information that's going to help you and to make things as good as they can be for you, and then put you in a position where you're feeling okay about making decisions about this child looks like the child I could parent. Because that bit of the process, I think, is the one that people find really hard.
Yeah.
Because you are in a position where you may be having to say, I can't do this. This is not the child that we feel we can parent. And we will absolutely give you permission to do that because we're not setting you or the child up to fail.
No.
We're here to help you to get into the position where you absolutely have that confidence and then have confidence in the decisions you're making about the child being placed. Not that we then, you know, that bit we said just before, that next bit, easy bit called the rest of your life. You know, the support and the continuing input as and if and when people need that is there, because it's a point in time that we get involved with people, and then that point in time is then a forever point in time. So that's a huge undertaking.
Thanks, Anna. Last question, and I think you've touched on many throughout our time chatting, but in your opinion, with all of your experience and everything that you've seen, heard, been a part of, what are the biggest rewards for adoptive parents, do you think?
I think it's that whole achievement of becoming a family.
Yeah.
You know, that families come in all shapes and sizes. One of the omissions I made before, you know, of those that come, we also do get those people, of course, who've already got children, either as adopted children or birth children. They just love being parents so much they're going to do it again and extend their family through adoption, which is just fantastic. I spoke to one of our social workers last week at our Christmas lunch, who's worked with us now for 10 years and is a very, very well established social worker, been doing this forever and ever, and said in the last 10 years that they've worked at Adoption Focus, it's the time when, as a social worker, they feel they've achieved the most, because it actually makes a difference. It makes life better for children because they actually get the childhood they need and the family life that will secure them and ground them to the extent that they can embrace adult life properly. And it also achieves for the adopters what they want, which is family life with children with whom they can move forward as a family. And you know, that's what it does. It makes that huge difference, and it just makes things better. And that's why I then have to go back to the motivation, because on the day you're having a really bad day, you have to think, yeah, but I've made things better.
Yeah.
Things are better. This is so much more than it could have been for this child. And we've done that. That's what we've achieved. And by we, I mean these adopters, because they are just amazing. They are just amazing. And for a long established, been social worker for 40 odd years, saying the last 10 years have been the best ever, because it's made such a difference, and it's just brilliant. That's just brilliant. And we've got fabulous people.
We really, really have.
Just an amazing team of staff, and then an amazing growing family of adopters who are the experts, and just time and time again, just do so much, just make it so much better.
They make a difference, don't they? Anna, thank you so much. It's been so lovely to talk to you.
It's been an absolute pleasure. You know, I can always talk to you.
Not at all, but we can do some future episodes. A few things I heard and I thought, there's a topic. So thank you, Anna, so much. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much to Anna for taking the time to talk about her experiences within the adoption sector and helping to bust some of those common myths. We'd love to hear what you think about this episode, or if you have any topics you'd like to hear us cover, please email in to podcast@adoption-focus.org.uk.